Glowworm by Alison Greaves. Chapter 2. Gemma. Gemma drops 8 stories onto a vampire dickhead in a shiny suit and probably breaks a bone. It's not the best idea she's had all year, from some perspectives, perspectives she will have to thoroughly confront when she next speaks to Helena. It's likely the worst idea she's had since she died. But you'd have to be an inhuman monster to sit and watch what that fucker was doing to that girl and not intervene. Because Gemma is an inhuman monster, she watched for quite a while, gripping the edge of the roof hard enough to shatter the brick. But when the woman saw her, when she met her eyes, Gemma's better undead angels won, and now she has an aftermath to deal with. Which includes at least one broken leg. Whatever, Gemma's had worse. She shakes it experimentally and feels the bone pop back into position. At least the man, Cooper, won't know who fucked him up. Anonymity is sort of key here. She checks him and it seems incredibly like he's trying to get up. Impressive! Still moving after some bitch lands on his back and kicks him face first into a wall. So she grabs him by the neck and works on him with her knife. Rule 1, stay behind when you blind them. Now, who the hell is the girl? The mystery girl. Woman, Gemma corrects herself. She looks older than she did from up on the roof. Mid-20s, probably. Is somehow even worse off than Cooper. Her legs are broken, one of them showing bone through skin, which is an injury with recovery time measured in multiple months, if Gemma knows anything about humans heal. She doesn't really. Carefully, she touches the woman in places she looks the worst. Hips, shoulders, the other leg. And in every case the skin concaves, as if the flesh underneath has collapsed. So, internal bleeding and a lot of it, in addition to the absolute carnival of blood in the narrow alleyway. Gemma can smell it everywhere. She downgrades the woman's condition to basically dead. Cooper stirs again. That won't do at all. She marches over, plants her good foot on his neck and forces his face back into the dirt. Reaches down and tears at the wound in his throat, opening it wider. She stabs him a few times too, under his ugly jacket, just to make sure he really won't be getting up for a good long while. These older ones, they sure are tenacious. One more stab for luck. God, she aches to kill him. It would be so easy. A groan from the woman. Right, rescue and recovery first, murder fantasies later. Dealing with how fucked up everything suddenly become, even later than that. Gemma stamps down hard on Cooper's head, hard enough to break his skull a little, definitely hard enough to knock him all the way out. Fucker can't even crawl if he's unconscious. Gemma returns to the woman, noting as she does that her leg is complaining less than it had just minutes before, healing already. It's a reminder that Cooper probably heals even faster, and thus whatever she's about to do has to be done quickly, unless she wants to spend the entire night stabbing and re-stabbing the little shit every time he shows signs of unlife. The idea has a certain appeal. Whatever. However powerful his regenerative abilities, Cooper will definitely be blind for a while. Eyes are tricky. But Gemma's leg will be basically back to normal inside 5 minutes. She can be on the other side of town before Cooper can see his hand in front of his face. She crouches down next to the woman, who is breathing shallowly and making awful, wheezing, bubbling noises as she does so. She won't survive being moved 10 feet. She definitely won't make it as far as the safe house. So, time to make a decision. Is this woman going to live? Yes. Gemma snaps her fingers in the woman's face. Hey! Hey! Can you hear me? Silence. Lifeless. Half-closed eyes looking at nothing. It might already be too late. Fuck it. In for a penny. She pulls up a sleeve and slices her wrist open, quick and clean. Clamps the woman's nose shut, pulls down the mask, wipes away some foul-smelling fluid, shoves her bleeding wrist into the woman's mouth and flexes. Blood dribbles around the woman's lips. Gemma pushes her wrist in harder, feels teeth bite unconsciously at her skin, and suppresses a laugh at the irony. She's fairly certain this will be enough to get at least some of her blood into the woman's system, but she's never tried it before. Seen it on TV, though. On Angel, or Dark Angel, or Detective Angel, or Devil Angel, or Angel High School, or some shit. So much TV glamour in this alleyway. Gemma withdraws her wrist after a short while and makes sure the blood hasn't pooled in the back of the woman's mouth. As long as it's gone into the stomach or lungs, it should be fine. It might even absorb under the tongue, like a pill would. She opens the woman's mouth again to drip a little extra blood there before her wrist finishes healing. Every little helps. With any luck, the woman will be safe to move after just a few minutes. Unless, of course, she flat out dies, which would be extremely bad for everyone. Gemma stands, licks her fingers idly and surveys the surroundings again. Takes a few crime scene photos for Helena. Flexes her leg, walkable. Gathers up what she can find of the woman's belongings, wipes up the worst of the blood with a rag, undrinkable sadly, and scuffs the rest into the dirt, counts seconds under her breath. 5-ish minutes later and the woman's breathing is slightly more steady. Good, she'll live, probably. With a whispered apology, Gemma hauls her up on one shoulder, carrying her like you'd carry a drunk who might at any moment barf on your shoes. She slings the woman's bag over her other shoulder, kicks Cooper one more time in the head for luck, and steps out onto the street. Viv wakes violently, fighting off the man coming at her from every possible angle in a fitful, exhausting sleep. Throws the covers off with a kick, sits up and twists away from the memory of him sinking his teeth into her neck, catches her wrist painfully. The shock pulls her shaking out of the dream and she opens her eyes. She's in an unfamiliar room, handcuffed to a radiator by the wrist. The important thing is, don't scream, at least not right away. Viv counts to 10. She looks around. She's handcuffed to a cold iron radiator in a dingy basement room, the kind with windows barely 2 feet tall set right where the walls meet the ceiling. The walls themselves have been whitewashed at some time in their life. Whitewashed brick in the alley, smeared with blood, her blood, blocked out by her advancing attacker. Not now. But have since been stained by the brown-green of damp and neglect. Viv sits on a bed of boxes and coats, some of which are now scattered across the room, thrown around by her nightmare. The far corner of the room looks more lived in, with another, less makeshift mattress, a battered armchair, a roller suitcase and some wooden boxes set up as tables. A small, dull lamp and several smartphones are plugged into an extension cable of the rugged, outdoor safe sort. Aisle 4, next to patio heaters, which snakes out of the only unboarded window. There's a door, but it's painted shut. A squat, then. Viv looks down at herself. Blood. It takes her a second to realise it's not fresh, but dry damp. It flakes off when she moves. Experimentally, she shakes her free arm over the scattered coats and it rains little shards of rust. Another memory prompts her to throw off the remaining coats and she grits her teeth and looks down, finally to face the mangled remains of her legs. They're fine. Bruised. Sure, like usual, but they don't hurt much when she pokes at them, which is almost unprecedented. It makes no sense. She remembers being attacked, thrown around like a missile, taunted and chased down, pushed into the ground, and... not now, Vivian! But all she has to show for it are some strangely cosmetic bruises, and a dress torn at the shoulder seams, covered in blood and off-white flecks of paint. Inexplicable. There's a note on the floor next to her. Hi, Vivian. You are in my safe house. I am not affiliated with your attacker. I hope to be back before you read this, but if I'm not, know that you are safe as long as you stay put. And please be quiet. Kiss, kiss. Having exhausted all her other options, Viv decides to scream. Rabbit. Gamey. Gemma's got no actual reference point for the taste. She never had rabbit when she was alive, nor any other game animal. But every creature is distinct, and she's heard the word, so she's come to think of rabbits as gamey. Perhaps even a little grassy, and upsettingly cute. She drains it dry. The thirst's been running her ragged all week, and tonight only made things worse. If she'd known this morning that before the next sunrise she'd have jumped off a building, brutalised her sire, drained herself into a complete stranger, and then dragged said stranger all the way back to the safe house, she would have filled up on something more than just an opportunistic urban fox. It fell asleep right in front of her. It would have been rude not to eat it. When it came time to lay the woman, her name's Vivian Taylor according to the driving licence in her bag, on a hastily cobbled together bed, it was all Gemma could do to stop up her nose and leap back out of the window before she succumbed to temptation and made poor Vivian's night even worse. It wasn't even Vivian's fault, she smelled so fucking delicious. Page 1 of the Vampire Manual, not that Gemma's ever seen or heard of such a thing, says in its first chapter, in a suitably gothic font, "Drink regularly and drink your fill. A full vampire is a happy vampire." But the manual, which definitely exists and which Gemma will, one of these days, acquire a copy of, if only to fill the margins with rude comments, is for the good vampires. The authorised vampires, the vampires who get the cushy vampire jobs and the subsidised vampire housing and unrestricted access to vampire Starbucks. Gemma, who exists in a legal grey area, the only vamp to do so as far as her boss and patron Helena knows, has to survive without perks like helpful instruction and enough blood to live. It could be worse. She could be unauthorised, turned without permission and without the retroactive semi-validation Gemma enjoys, living a terrified and short life hiding from humans and vampires alike. Poor fuckers, never to see the inside of the Vampire Manual or Vampire Starbucks. Gemma's seen how they live and it's not pleasant. She's also seen how they die. She got tasked with hunting down a nest a few years ago, an upsetting job which they made marginally morally more manageable by shooting at her with guns. She hates the work, sometimes, but she has to stay useful lest she share their fate, so she does whatever she's asked. And occasionally there are perks, like supervised visits to Vampire Starbucks. Helena hates it when she calls it that. She does her game-catching routine again. She sits perfectly still, holds her breath, becomes scenery, and grabs the first unfortunate creature curious enough to investigate, which here, on the edge of the university campus, is usually a rabbit. Perhaps another, more practiced, more smug and annoying vampire would have been able to feed from Vivian while she slept without losing control and draining her dry. Gemma's simply not got the knack. Never had the chance to develop it. Baby vamps are trained for weeks on animals, then on live volunteers, human and vampire, in a controlled environment. But that's another perk, like the extremely real manual, her quasi-legal status denies her. Helena's been able to help a little, and together they got Gemma's animal kill percentage under 50, but the thirst is a difficult beast to tame. Occasionally she practices on larger animals, deer mainly, but her failures haven't exactly given her confidence, just a stack of inconvenient corpses to hide. Best to accept her weakness and stick to small animals whose bodies don't attract comment as long as she buries them or, if she's in a hurry, throws them really, really far. It's supposedly possible to go for a long time on just a few drops of blood. Helena's told her in disapproving tones about the young ones, the new terns with unexciting sires and unexciting lives and unexciting desk jobs in the corporation, coddled practically from the moment they leave the coffin. Another extremely real thing denied Gemma. They never get in fights, they never feed their precious blood to random humans, they never drop off buildings and break their legs. A whole generation of vampires born to a whole generation of homebodies who themselves came to the second life after post-war restrictions came in. Killing humans is as unimaginable to them as it is forbidden to the older, more traditionally bloodthirsty vampires, and Gemma, statistical outlier and unhappy about it. Some of them apparently club together and buy a bottle of donated human blood between them, dilute it with water and space their consumption out over a whole week. They call it hemeopathy, Helena told Gemma with the irritated frown she wears when forced to engage with the habits of the young, the under 70. "Who we are, who we should be," Helena said the last time they met, for a debrief that turned into a bar crawl and ended with Helena using her access card to get them into Vampire Starbucks. That is, one of the corporate clinics which serve animal and donated human blood, warm, in paper cups with cinnamon and chocolate shavings. "You have to live life on the fringes, yes, damned by our own rules, and it's terrible, darling, I know, but you're a vampire. You've hunted, you've killed, you're on first name terms with your inner demon. Plenty of blood on your hands." "And in my hair," Gemma thinks, as a few errant gore-stained locks tickle her cheeks. "Stabbing Cooper and healing Vivian, messy business." She pulls out and reties her ponytail and nabs another passing bunny. Wonders how many rabbits she'll have to drain just to take the edge off. She's buried 9 so far and her hands are still shaking. Fucking Cooper, he's off schedule and off his rocker. Turning a human against her will after only a week of tailing her is absolute madness. All good sense and Cooper's established pattern of almost a century says that he should still be building a profile on her, divining friends, family, work, gym, favourite pub, and so on. He followed Gemma for nearly 2 months before he finally got her alone in the car park of the 24-hour Tesco, and she'd been even more isolated than Vivian appears to be. She at least seems to have co-workers to notice her absence. Cooper's risking everything. Why? Maybe he's just getting old. I'm such an idiot, Gemma mutters to herself, burying another rabbit. She could have let him take the woman, filmed him turning her, tailed him to wherever he keeps his thralls, and then taken the evidence to the board. She could have been mere weeks away from witnessing his ignoble death. No, 2 decades spent wondering what might have happened to her had Cooper taken her prisoner like the others instead of leaving her for dead have left Gemma unable to picture a world where she leaves another woman to suffer such a fate, even if it means letting go of a chance at Cooper's head. Never mind that stopping him is her job, there have to be other ways. Gemma retreats briefly into the memory of his attack on her. At least she got the chance to stab him a lot. That was 20 years coming and worth all the gross Cooper blood on her clothes. An armful more adorable small animals later, Gemma regains something akin to equilibrium and buries the last of the 16 rabbits. She brushes dirt from her hands and sits back on her haunches, looking down the hill at the university grounds below and the wind tunnel towers that comprise the cheaper student accommodation. Gemma's little square cell had been on the 10th floor. She can still picture the awful posters she put up to cover the depressing white bricks. The question remains, why is Cooper back to kidnapping women after almost 20 years apparent quiescence? Why Vivian in particular? And why try to take her so early? Either Gemma's wrong and she's more isolated than she appears, enough that he feels confident taking her after so little time spent gathering information on her, or something's changed with Cooper and his already disturbingly cushy relationship to the directors. She won't find her answers staring at her old tower block. Gemma kicks off from her vantage point and sets off for the safe house and the mysterious Vivian Taylor. Please stop screaming. Not the most encouraging opening line. As a response to a yell for help, downright unsettling. Viv looks up to see a woman frowning at her through the narrow window. The person from the roof? Viv's had time, between screams, to step through her memories, and while none of it makes sense, why, when there is no evidence to support it, does she remember so vividly being thrown around, being badly hurt, practically dismembered? She recognises the same vague shape of the figure on the roof looking down. Whoever she is, she slides through the open window and lands the 8-foot drop in a perfect crouch. Viv wants to hold up a scorecard. She couldn't have moved like that on her best day. Why isn't this woman competing internationally? Surely cuffing disabled women to radiators can't take up all her time. The woman draws back her hood, revealing a pale and lightly freckled face. Deep brown eyes, light brown hair in a messy ponytail, and a nose with a slight kink in it. She's got a mask on, one of the cheap paper ones, and she untangles it with an irritated flick, revealing full lips and a sharp jawline. Viv leans forward, drawn to the woman, and realises the freckles are actually flecks of dirt. No, wait, that's blood. Viv shuffles back as far as the handcuffs will allow her to go. It clinks on the metal. Hi, says the woman. I'm Gemma. Where am I? You're safe. Still in town? The woman, Gemma, nods. Still in town, on the outskirts. Viv gets it over with. What do you want from me? Gemma's been balancing in a crouch on the tips of her toes, perfectly steady. At this she straightens. God, she's tall. takes a single long step and flops lightly into the armchair. She picks up a hand mirror, inspects herself with a frown, and cleans her face with a wet wipe. Viv is not reassured by how routine this looks. This is a woman who regularly cleans blood off her face. "I want you to stay here tonight," she says. "That's all, and at least stay reasonably quiet." "Then give me a reason not to scream until someone comes," Viv, handcuffed to a fucking radiator, says. She clinks it to enhance her point. Gemma closes her eyes and goes very still. "I'm sorry about the cuff," she says, with a strain to her voice that suggests that sitting in a comfy chair is somehow an effort. "But I can't take chances. The man who attacked you is still out there. He's probably looking for us, you, and I'm not certain I can stop him again. I don't have the element of surprise anymore, for one. He'll be watching for the person who protected you. So you need to stay here tonight. We can work something out in the morning, somewhere more permanent for you to stay." Memory takes Viv's breath for a while. "It was real then?" she says. Her voice cracks on the last word. She can't shake the image of the man from the bar leaning down over her until he filled her vision entirely, no matter that it makes no sense. "You were attacked," Gemma says, nodding. "You were almost unconscious by the time I intervened, and when I was done putting him down, you were out cold. So I brought you here to keep you safe and recover." Viv's memories scratch at her, telling her not to trust this woman. Everything about this is contradictory. She remembers being attacked, but she's uninjured. This woman saved her, but has her handcuffed and unable to leave. Most likely, there never was an attack. Probably there was something in her drink. She passed out, had mad dreams, and woke up alone in a basement. Whatever truly happened, Viv knows two things. She needs to string the woman along, make her believe Viv accepts her version of events, and she needs to leave as soon as she has an opening. She fidgets until she's put her body between Gemma and the handcuff and starts massaging the base of her thumb with her fingers. Gemma sits forwards, forearms on her knees, stares unblinking at Viv, unsettling.
"Are you hungry?"
Placate her. "Yes," Viv says, "famished." Gemma nods and without looking reaches into the mess on the floor by the armchair. She extracts a box of cereal bars and throws them over. It lands upright on the floor next to Viv. A pack of disposable antiseptic wipes lands next to them, perfectly, exactly geometrically next to them, like Tetris blocks. When Gemma finishes sweeping the golds at the Olympics, she should go hustle at pool. Viv cleans the box, extracts a bar, and eats.
"I can't tell you much," Gemma says.
"Unsurprising.
But you should know that Cooper, the man who attacked you, has done this before. He kidnaps women, takes them somewhere, keeps them alive, we think, but unable to leave. I'm a private contractor, and I've been trying to catch him in the act."
"Like, bait him? In that?" Viv can't help poking a hole in Gemma's lies. "Stupid, shut up." Gemma blinks as if the idea hadn't occurred to her, but then incorporates it into her story.
"Yeah, I just wasn't expecting him to act tonight. These are blending in clothes, not bait the bad guy clothes."
She pulls at her dirty hoodie sleeve. Viv notices more blood. Deeply unsettling.
"I'd lost track of him at the bar. By the time I'd found him, he'd found you."
Ridiculous. The creepy old guy was probably innocent enough, just another lecher. Add him to the fucking list. "Did you call the cops?" "Shut up, Viv." Another blank stare, then,
"Nah, he has friends in high places. I need to catch him at it. Video evidence is hard to make disappear, but you were already in trouble when I got there, and stopping him, saving you, took precedence."
She scowls.
"I really hope my boss agrees."
Viv stopped cataloguing the things in Gemma's story that don't make sense. The only facts that matter are Viv was alone in a bar, and now she's handcuffed. She plays along, continuing to massage her thumb as Gemma talks. She's got out of cuffs before, back when Matt, bless his idiot soul, discovered kink and cuffed her to her tiny dorm bed, insisting it would be deeply erotic. Viv slipped out of the handcuffs and slapped them on him instead, left him there while she made gentle fun of him on Twitter. But even back then, before things got really bad, it had hurt. She hadn't been able to hold a pen for a week. The woman's looking more and more tired the longer she talks. Viv keeps her at it until, finally, Gemma succumbs to exhaustion and falls straight back in her chair like someone switched her off. Viv waits for snores or heavy breathing or something, but after 10 minutes of Gemma sitting perfectly still, she decides, fuck it. Now or never. Viv selects a cleanish coat from the pile under her, grips the sleeve between her teeth, closes her eyes and presses as hard as she can into the base of her thumb just above the handcuff. When she hits the pain threshold, she bites down on the coat and keeps going until finally, horribly, her thumb caves into her palm and the cuff slips off. The sound is almost as bad as the sensation, like crushing a tennis ball filled with jelly. She almost passes out. She really does scream a little into the coat. Gemma, apparently, sleeps through this. Viv assesses herself, free but filthy, still covered in flakes of blood or whatever this stuff is. Her dress is ruined, but not actually indecent enough to invite comment. She steals the coat anyway. It turns out to be another hoodie. She gathers up her cane and bag, checks the contents, all there, but her phone is smashed, enough that it doesn't even turn on, so she helps herself to one of the phones charging on the makeshift table and one of Gemma's supply of paper masks. Zips up the hoodie. It says, Y2OK, across the front. She shakes her hand, works her thumb back into position. It's painful in the way that pressing on a really bad bruise is painful, and now the initial shock has passed, it's really not that bad. Nothing she's not used to. The window's going to be a challenge, though. It's been a decade since she quit gymnastics, and almost as much time since she did anything with her body beyond mandatory stretches. Running up a wall and grabbing a ledge wouldn't have been too hard for 16-year-old Viv, but at 26, she's going to be feeling this for a month. And that's if she doesn't injure herself somehow in the attempt. Viv takes one last look at Gemma. She's striking, no doubt about it, with that flawless skin and strong jaw. It would be lovely to believe she's telling the truth, but Viv is not naive. There's no explanation for how she ended up in that handcuff that isn't shady as hell at best. She wonders what exactly went wrong in Gemma's life that she feels the need to kidnap random women and attach them to radiators. Stop procrastinating. Go. Viv shrugs, looks to the wall she has to scale, takes several sharp breaths the way she used to back when she could really move, and runs.